Welcome to Dispatches, the official podcast for the Journal of the American Revolution. The Journal of the American Revolution publishes weekly online at www.allthingsliberty.com. For the latest in research, reviews, and commentaries, America's most important history is available free of charge at the Journal of the American Revolution.
Well, hopefully my article will encourage readers to look at the participants in these events as people and appreciate what they went through had an impact on them as individuals.
That's Journal of the American Revolution contributor Sherman Loans discussing General John Burgoyne's stay in Albany. And he's our guest today. I'm Brady Kreitzer, and this is Dispatches. This episode is sponsored by the Small Battle series with two new releases: The Battle of Musgrove's Mill, 1782, by John Buchanan, and The Battle of Harlem Heights, 1776, by David Price. Available now wherever books are sold. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Dispatches. I'm your host, Brady Kreitzer. Today our guest is Journal of the American Revolution contributor Sherman Loans, and he'll be discussing General John Burgoyne's stay in Albany. Of all the characters in the American Revolution, of all the figures, either patriot, loyal, or on the British side, none is more misunderstood than General John Burgoyne. Some see him as a thespian general. Others see him as a partier. There's a lot of rumors swirling around about John Burgoyne. Sherman Loans helps us get to the bottom of some of them regarding his captivity, so to speak, after his surrender at Saratoga. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our interview with Sherman Loans. Sherman Loans, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Sherman, you're a first-time guest. Tell us about your background.
Well, I've always had an interest in history, and at the time of the bicentennial, I was in high school and was invited by a classmate to participate in a reenactment. Since then, I've continued to do that with a number of units, and one of the things that I found most enjoyable was researching the history and the story of the people in the units that I was involved in. In history, I was a history major and was fortunate to be able to do a three-month internship at the Massachusetts State Archives. I was also in the RTC program in college and planned to go to law school, which I did, and become a JAG officer, which I didn't do. Instead, I had dual careers as an attorney and later a healthcare facility regulator in state government, and in the Army Reserve, first as an infantry officer and later as a joint staff officer. After I retired, I began spending more time researching the American Revolution and Massachusetts in particular.
Sherman, what first drew your interest into this topic?
I was actually looking for information on the Massachusetts militia, and one of the documents I found was the diary of David Howe, which was published in 1865. Howe was from Methuen, Massachusetts. He fought at Bunker Hill. He served in the Continental Army in 1775 and 1776. And in 1777, he was a militiaman, one of the thousands that were called up to stop Burgoyne. In his diary, he mentions passing through the town that I live in, escorting the prisoners from Saratoga on a road that I was taking back and forth to work every day. At the time, I filed that away, and thinking about it more later, did more research on the march of the Saratoga Convention Army. With regard to Burgoyne, I was finding in my research that accounts were putting him in two places at one time. Some of the stories had him going through Northampton and Hadley, Massachusetts, where it was said his ghost haunted a dormitory at Smith College, and he gave his sword to his host in Hadley, neither of which is true, by the way. Other stories had him going through Great Barrington and Westfield, Massachusetts. That led me to look further as what happened to Burgoyne after Saratoga.
For those who aren't familiar, could you tell us what happens to Burgoyne after his surrender?
Sure. Saratoga, of course, was a turning point in the American Revolution, and General Gates, who commanded the Northern Army, had agreed under the Articles of Convention that over 5,000 prisoners, including Burgoyne, would march to Boston and be allowed to return to England. one of his brigade commanders, Brigadier General John Glover, was assigned the responsibility to move the Convention Army from Saratoga to Boston, and he split them into two groups, the British traveling through Vermont and Williamstown, Massachusetts, and then crossing the Connecticut River at Northampton, and the Germans traveling south to Kinderhook, New York, and then through Great Barrington and crossing the Connecticut River at Springfield, Massachusetts. Burgoyne, though, didn't march with his troops. On the day of the surrender, Burgoyne rides out and meets with General Gates and has that famous dinner with Gates, and then is escorted to Albany by American cavalry. He arrives in Albany on the 19th, leaves Albany on the 27th for Cambridge, and then returns to England in May of 1778.
Sherman, where does Burgoyne stay in Albany, and why does he stay there?
Burgoyne was invited by General Philip Schuyler to stay at his Albany home. Burgoyne wrote later that Schuyler sent an aide to conduct him to Albany to give him quarters that would be better than a stranger might be able to find. And he goes on to describe Schuyler's house as very elegant, and that to his great surprise, he was greeted by Schuyler's wife and family, and he remained there his entire stay in Albany. On one hand, that's not unusual, as a lot of travelers during the period would stay at the home of someone they knew or someone in their social class or profession. On the other hand, it would seem a bit awkward, though, as Schuyler had been relieved of command of the Northern Army after Burgoyne captured Fort Ticonderoga and Mount Independence in July. And Burgoyne had ordered Schuyler's Saratoga home to be burned on October 10th.
Sherman, you write about this in your article. There's a lot of rumors and stories about Burgoyne's business during this time. What do those rumors usually say?
Well, after my article came out, I actually had someone email to me a comment to the effect of, "Gentleman Johnny Burgoyne, he knew how to party." And that's probably the most common opinion. I think Burgoyne's own description of his stay is partly to blame for that. He wrote that when he arrived in Albany, Schuyler's wife hosted a dinner for him with more than 20 courses, and that he was offered every possible demonstration of hospitality. One online account even speculates that while Burgoyne was at the Schuyler house, he had his eye on one of Schuyler's daughters.
Sherman, what kind of sources shed a more accurate light on this subject?
Well, several sources mentioned Burgoyne's stay in Albany. Colonel Jedithan Baldwin, for example, his journal mentions Burgoyne's baggage being sent across the Hudson River and Burgoyne departing Albany on the 27th. And General Gates, when he sent copies of the Articles of Confederation to General Gates, when he sent copies of the Articles of Convention to various state governors, included a mention that Burgoyne was going to be escorted to Cambridge by Generals Glover and William Whipple. The most important source that I found was William Whipple's journal in the Portsmouth Athenaeum. Whipple lived in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. He was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. And in 1777, he was a brigadier general in the New Hampshire militia. You've likely seen his picture. He appears in Trumbull's signing of the Declaration, seated second from the left, and the surrender at Saratoga, standing with his arm resting on the cannon. The journal he kept on the Saratoga campaign details Burgoyne's stay in Albany and the various stops that they made along the way. In contrast to these sources, Baroness Bradazel's memoirs suggest Burgoyne was mostly enjoying himself and that they were all received in a most friendly manner in Albany.
This is really hard to pin down, but what do we know about Burgoyne's mental state during this time?
I would agree, but most likely Burgoyne was worn out both physically and mentally. His wife had died in June of 1776 while he was in America. He had been on campaign for 4 months before the surrender, beginning with his movement from Canada in June with all the responsibilities of command. He had fought in two pitched battles at Saratoga, and in the Battle of Bemis Heights on October 7th, an aide who was delivering a message to him was shot through the arm. He writes he had one shot passed through his hat, another through his waistcoat. His own aide was mortally wounded. And Brigadier General Simon Fraser, who commanded the advance course, was also mortally wounded. Fraser would ask to be buried in a section of the British fortifications known as the Great Redoubt before he died. And as he was being buried, the funeral party, including Burgoyne, came under cannon fire. General Glover later writes that when they arrived in Cambridge, the poor condition of the roads made the trip almost too much for Burgoyne's shattered constitution. Perhaps most significant, though, is that he had also surrendered his army and expected that when he returned to England, he would be blamed for its defeat.
Sherman, what does Burgoyne write about his stay?
Burgoyne wrote very little about his stay in Albany. Perhaps the best known is the description of the dinner that was hosted by General Schuyler's wife when he arrived. He does mention his health in his dispatches and the letter that he writes to his nieces, and notes that he was under a perpetual fire, had spent 16 nights with very little sleep without changing his clothes, sleeping outside, and that the entire army was in the jaws of famine. He was at a point where he said that he was exhausted to such a degree that he could scarcely hold his pen. In addition to the dispatches he writes, he was negotiating for the exchange of prisoners captured before the surrender. And he was focused to a large degree on explaining why he surrendered, explaining that it was not his fault, and casting the terms of the Articles of Convention in the best possible light.
What ultimately happens to Burgoyne?
Ultimately, Burgoyne dies in England in 1792, and he's buried in Westminster Abbey in London. His grave was actually unmarked until 1960, when what was believed to be the spot he was buried in was marked with his name and the date that he was born and died. As to his stay in Albany, he stayed at the Schuyler Mansion until the 27th, and then traveled down to Kinderhook and over to Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and crossed the Connecticut River at Springfield, and eventually arrives in Cambridge, Massachusetts on November 7th of 1777. He stays in Cambridge for only 6 months and returns to England in April of 1778. Once he arrives in England, he attempts to defend both his campaign and his reputation, and does so before Parliament in 1779, but without any resolution. And he publishes a summary of his defense in 1780, with the title A State of the Expedition from Canada. In his personal life, Burgoyne never remarried after the death of his wife. After he returned to England, he did have 4 children with an opera singer, Sarah Caulfield, and one of his sons, Sir John Fox Burgoyne, would go on to become an engineer in the British Army, was a chief engineer in another major British defeat in North America, the Battle of New Orleans in 1815.
How does this article help us understand the Revolutionary Era better?
Well, hopefully my article will encourage readers to look at the participants in these events as people and appreciate what they went through had an impact on them as individuals. It's also a good example of the need to question the assumptions that we may have about the period or even the present day, and to look at the sources that we rely on to reach our conclusions. I think that's one of the reasons that Journal of American Revolution is such a great resource, is it does require its writers to rely on primary sources and to document those sources. Perhaps I can conclude, though, by saying that Burgoyne was not without his faults, especially with regard to the Saratoga campaign. But I'll leave that for others to explore.
Sherman Loans, thanks again.
Thank you.
The music played in this episode included works by Kevin MacLeod and the Sturbridge Colonial Militia. Any unauthorized reproduction or use of this podcast without the express written permission of the Journal of the American Revolution is strictly prohibited. For everyone here at Dispatches, I'm Brady Kreitzer saying so long.